It's the Criterion. It's the Criterion. 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 In Crudged.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Criterion Project, the show where we talk about movies in the Criterion Channel or the Criterion Collection, or both, or neither. Today we're doing something a little bit different, as we tend to do every now and then, a special episode about the Oscars.
Yay!
Oscars, that was a weird way to pronounce it. I'm talking about the Oscars. How are you doing, Rachel?
I'm doing good, because I always look forward to the Super Bowl of movies.
That's right. The Super Bowl of movies. So what we're gonna do is we'll give a little bit of our predictions of, I guess, what we think might win on Oscar night, but this is mainly, we're gonna go through the Best Picture nominees. There are 10 of them this year, and we are going to talk not so much about those movies, but try to recommend something that we think is, you know, a good companion movie, either something that is similar that we think would be a good double feature, or maybe if it's a movie that we don't like, maybe something that we think does similar things a little bit better or more interesting to us. So to, you know, kind of like once the Oscars season is over next Sunday or this Sunday, when you're listening to this, you'll be able to have a bunch of movies to watch and catch up with that are similar.
Yeah, we thought it might be fun to both for the people that liked these Oscar nominees or people that didn't like them, give kind of the puzzle pieces that kind of make up these movies.
That's right. That is very true. And actually, looking at the movies that I'm going to be talking about, I think most of them I actually didn't like that much. So I feel like I'm being, in order to not be so negative, I think I'm going to be trying to talk about movies that I think are very good. So what we did is that we took the 10 Best Picture nominees and we divided them, we 5 for each of us, and we're going to give a recommendation for each. Mm-hmm. So why don't we start, Rachel, with your first movie and recommendation. What's the first movie that you got?
The first one that I got is Past Lives.
Past Lives, which is, we know it's the movie by Celine Song about kind of like two lovers across, you know, this, well, lovers, it's an interesting story. How would you describe Past Lives?
Well, so it's about this woman who comes in contact with an old friend from her childhood days that when she lived in Korea, and she immigrated to the United States, and they had gone kind of off and on in keeping in touch, and he comes back and for a visit, and she basically, even though she's married and she does love her husband,
so complicated.
Has a moment of, this is the other life that I could have led. This is the and I enjoyed this movie. I think it's very well done. I was so like tense watching it. It was like a thriller for me because I loved her husband so much. I loved that actor's performance. I just thought he was so endearing and selfless and wonderful. And I just didn't want her to cheat on her husband. And so I was just like, no. And then she doesn't, and it's all okay. But it was, I can't overstate how stressed out I was watching it.
That's so interesting. I think for most movies, it's more like a longing, independent type of movie. And for Rachel, it was this, like, you know, heart pulsing experience.
He's so nice.
So what do you have to recommend along with Past Lives, Rachel?
Well, so I kind of, I don't know if it's cheating or not, but I had listed a couple for each of mine. But if I had to pick one, I would pick, In the Mood for Love.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah. It's got a lot of atmosphere. It's about this this love that just wasn't meant to be. But it's very, very sexy and swoony.
Yeah. Lush and swoony and sexy. Two people living in the same apartment building who, you know, clearly are falling in love with each other, but they're both married, and so they can't quite pursue that relationship. I think that's a very, very good recommendation based on a movie that has a similar vibe to Past Lives in theme and in some of the style as well, even though I do think In the Mood for Love is more stylish than Past. Well, you know, very few movies are more stylish than In the Mood for Love, to be honest.
That's true. And Tony Leung, he's the most, I think he's the most handsome man I've ever seen in my
especially
life.
In that movie.
In that movie. Oh my god.
Yeah, and Maggie Cheung is not far behind in terms of like beautiful people wearing incredible clothes. So we actually covered In the Mood for Love years ago in this podcast. Yeah. So people can go back and listen to our episode if they like.
And then another one that I think is perfect is a little anime movie called 5 Centimeters per Second. This is Makoto Shinkai, and it's about two childhood friends who keep in contact through letters and writing letters and the romance that they might have. Another one I thought of is Call Me by Your Name. I feel like has some similar tone and feel and kind of young love and a thing. And and then the last one that I thought of is The Weeknd Andrew Hay, kind of this moment in time. That this love that just wasn't meant to be, but they have kind of a moment. And so that's what I thought of.
All right, great. Plenty of recommendations there. In terms of the Oscars, it doesn't look like Past Lives is going to win anything from what
I
can
don't
tell.
Think so.
I guess its biggest shot would be in screenplay. It's only nominated for 2 Oscars, Best Picture and Best Screenplay, Best Original Screenplay. So that would be its biggest shot, but it doesn't seem likely. However, it's got a really good reception and it got great reviews. And I liked it as well. I didn't quite love it, but I think it's a pretty good movie. So
And it won the Spirit Award, the Best Picture. So
that's right, the Independent Spirit Award. So there is that as well. So you know, I guess that'll have to be kind of its consolation prize for this season.
Yes.
All right. My first movie that I got is American Fiction, which is a, you know, kind of like a satiric comedy and family drama at the same time. Stars Jeffrey Wright as a writer, a novelist who is Black but is not getting the success that he wants because he, you know, because the industry kind of demands of him that he write quote-unquote Black stories and Black books that he, you know, kind of wants to write about. Like, you know, he thinks there's more to his life and to what he wants to write about than just like what, you know, basically white people think about is the Black experience, you know? And so he, as a jest, writes this book that he thinks is like so outrageous and bad, and he sends it and turns out that white people love that book, you know? And he kind of like becomes a bit of a successful writer in an unexpected way. And at the same time, he's kind of dealing with a lot of family drama involving his mother and his sister and his siblings. You know, there's like a lot of like family situations going on as well. And I enjoyed this movie, but I did feel like it was just okay. And I thought that for what it was trying to do, especially in the satire, I didn't quite get the mixing of these two things, of the very satiric comedy and the family drama. I thought it ended up being in a kind of like a, you know, a mix that ended up feeling a little bit lukewarm, or like it wasn't quite as powerful as I was hoping it would be and insightful in what it was trying to say. So the movie that I thought about to recommend immediately is a movie that I think it's far less of a crowd pleaser than American Fiction is, but it does get at the satiric element of, you know, the kind of like appropriation of Black life and Black stereotypes by the entertainment business in a much more, well, honestly, uncomfortable way, which I think is appropriate for the subject, which is the movie Bamboozled by Spike Lee, which is a very abrasive movie about a TV executive who is in a similar situation to Jeffrey Wright in this movie, where he's, you know, being pigeonholed into doing the quote unquote black shows and black stuff. And so he gets fed up with it and he pitches a show that is basically a 21st century version of a minstrel show. You know, kind of like saying, like, this is so outrageous, they have to fire me. This is, I can't do this anymore. And instead, the network loves it and the people loves it, and it becomes this huge hit. And it's really an interesting kind of like, well, it is an incredibly bold movie in a lot of ways. When it came out in 2000, a lot of people were like dismissing it, saying like, well, it's, you know, this could never happen. Like, you know, they were kind of like going into the post-racial society stuff to say like, this was a little too outrageous for Spike Lee, or a little passe. But I think when you watch it now, you see, you know, some truth to the remnants of what is happening still, you know, the kind of like the other racial prejudice and injustice that still happens in this country and around the world.
Oh, cool. I haven't seen that. So yeah, I I think that that sounds like perfect choice. I, you know, I thought of the, even though it doesn't have the race element, I thought of The Player a little bit, and
Hollywood satire, yeah,
and I thought of Black Klansman.
Oh,
I mean, it doesn't
good...
have the it had similar themes, even though it's different. Different in industry. I think almost any Spike Lee would be somewhat in that same.
The other movie that I thought about is another that we covered on the show years ago, which is Hollywood Shuffle, which is another very comedic. That's much more of a crowd pleaser, about this actor in the 80s trying to make it in Hollywood and being frustrated, you know, this black actor by the stereotypes and all stuff.
Yeah.
So that's a very funny movie as well. Bamboozled is a tough movie. Obviously, there's a lot of imagery that is very, you know, harsh and insensitive in terms of racial stereotypes on purpose. But, you know, I think people should be warned. It's also filmed on digital video in 2000. So it looks very, everything about the movie is confrontational, even the way it looks. It's just what I want to say. So take it with a grain of salt when if you decide to watch this. If anyone listening, and also you, Rachel.
Cool. All right. Well, I
Sorry, before we move on, I do think American Fiction is probably going to win an Oscar for adapted screenplay, though. It seems likely. It has been winning a lot of those awards this season. So
yeah, it's got the momentum. So I think it will beat Oppenheimer in that one category.
Mm-hmm. That sounds right.
Yeah. So next, I have Oppenheimer, actually. I think that there's a lot you could go off of for this, but the first one I thought of was actually The Aviator.
Oh, yeah. That's funny, because I think at one point Christopher Nolan wanted to make a movie about Howard Hughes, too.
I just thought it's about kind of an eccentric person from history. It covers like a similar time period. It's lush and long, and a couple others that I thought of, JFK. I recently watched that for the first time. What a great movie. And the way it kind of builds the clues and leaves you to kind of decide what you think. Do you agree with conspiracy theorists? It's a really, really well acted, really good movie. Dr. Strangelove, obviously, you know, takes some of these same events, but a satirical thing, and so that might be kind of fun and interesting to watch together. Another one, Empire of the Sun, I thought of early Spielberg, World War II, kind of has that sort of epic feel. And then last, Apocalypse Now, I feel like kind of has a certain grandiose to it, that even though it's a different war, so, you know, what I thought of.
So a lot of recommendations. If you had to pick just one of those, which one would you go for?
I would pick The Aviator.
The Aviator. Right.
Yeah.
You know, the movie that I thought of about with Oppenheimer, I guess it's a little bit unexpected out there, but I was thinking of the idea in the movie of like this man unleashing something that he can't quite control, you know, and that he goes out of his hands and it's like so powerful that he doesn't know how to do it and the political ramifications of it and what it means and being, you know, kind of haunted by that a little bit. The movie that I thought of is one we covered not too long ago in this podcast, which is Meet John Doe, which is very, you know, different in terms of what is being out there. But just the way that the Barbara Stanwyck character in that movie creates this political figure, John Doe, and the movement kind of like goes along and becomes this huge, massive success that nobody can't really control. Everybody tries to control it and they can't, you know, because there's something powerful in it that nobody really knows how to harness. And I think that there's a similarity there, even though they're very different movies in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that, but I could see that. Yeah. That's such a good movie. I love that movie.
Yeah, I loved it too. And obviously Oppenheimer, it's a big front runner for all the Oscars this year. Best Picture, Director. I think it's probably going to win about 7 or 8 Oscars on Sunday.
Yeah, I think it will win Best Actor.
Best Actor for Cillian Murphy. Robert Downey Jr. in Supporting Actor. Mm-hmm. Looks very likely. Cinematography, editing, score, sound, probably. So.
Oh, I think that you think it will win sound.
Oh, it could be. It could not. Yeah, I'm just saying the things that I think are on the table for it. You know, I think sound might go to the zone of interest or something like that.
To me, that's the one that would just be insane. I just feel like no other. I don't know if I've ever seen a movie that sound is so integral to everything that happens. But I mean, I didn't love the movie either, but I don't know. Like, rarely is it such a character in the story. So I don't know. I just feel like that would be nuts for it not to win. But, you know, it could be Oppenheimer's night. So
I do think it could go either way. And once upon a time, it looked like Paul Giamatti had a good shot at Best Actor, but that seems to have turned into Cillian Murphy's favorite in recent weeks. He's been winning more and more stuff. So seems like that's gone that way.
All right. Well, and I think it's pretty much a lock that it's going to win Best Picture. It would be a huge surprise if it did.
It would be a big surprise. The picture and director, I think, are pretty much sewn up for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So next up, I have Barbie. And it was interesting to think about, but the one that I ended up with is Enchanted is my number one pick.
That is similar.
Yeah, you know, you have sort of a sweet, innocent character thrust into the mm-hmm. modern world and her kind of responses and how positive she sees everything compared to, you know, how cynical everybody is, especially this, you know, divorce attorney that she meets. And you know, Enchanted has some fun songs, as Barbie also has fun songs. And Enchanted isn't trying to say as much as Barbie's trying to say, but they're both really enjoyable in my opinion. So.
Yeah. That's not a bad, comparison and a good. I thought Barbie was one of the hardest ones to think about, so I was glad I didn't mm-hmm. have to do it. I don't know what I would have gone for, to be honest. There,
some others that I have is The Truman Show. I think it has some themes. 13 Going on 30.
Uh-huh. I love that movie. That's a good
It's a good one. Legally Blonde.
Sure.
And since I am the queen of Barbie movies, I could not put probably the best of the animated Barbie movies, Barbie Princess and the Pauper.
Oh, interesting. Which
has good songs. It's a good story. It's very enjoyable. So I think you'd be hard pressed to find a Barbie fan that doesn't think that's the best one. It's pretty much universal.
Movies, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Barbie, it's not looking so good for Barbie on Oscar night. I think
it will only win Best Song.
Best Song. And the question is which song, right? It looks like Billie Eilish, but I think it might be I'm Just Ken, you know, just because it's a more fun song. But one of those definitely should win it. Maybe
it might surprise with costumes.
Costumes or production design, something like that could also be going Barbie's way. But yeah, it looks like that's kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess I'm not too surprised. You know, it is, after all, a Barbie movie, a movie about Barbie. There is like some snubbery to the Academy at the end of the day, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, it didn't get the Best Director nomination, which was a huge deal for some people,
Yeah.
and you know. So yeah.
I do think it would, if they put it in an original screenplay, I think it would have a better chance there, but they put it in adapted, so.
Yeah, it's interesting. I guess that could be a big surprise. I doubt it because American Fiction has been getting so many awards, but they haven't really been nominated in the same category that many times because Barbie has been nominated mostly as an original up to this
Yeah.
point. So maybe it could surprise there. I wouldn't count on it, but I guess there's a shot.
Yeah.
My next which I think actually might be a good companion piece to Barbie is Poor Things, which is also about a woman, you know, kind of like going from one world into another and finding herself in through the journey.
Yeah.
Poor Things, a movie I really didn't like. I didn't think it was very funny. I thought it was overlong and kind of like overstayed its welcome and repetitive and didn't quite go in the interesting ways. I was also not taken by the things that were supposed to be kind of edgy and transgressive about it. It didn't feel like it was. So what I decided to pick was a movie that I do think goes into those transgressive places and goes for it, and that it is actually a Criterion movie, which is Female Trouble from 1974, directed by John Waters, the, you know, kind of like Pope of Trash, as he likes to call himself. And that's a movie in which Divine plays a woman. Actually, let me, it's been a while since I've seen it, so I'm gonna pull up the synopsis so I don't get something wrong. But Divine basically plays this woman who, Dawn Davenport is her name, and she is this bratty schoolgirl who grows up and becomes basically a mass murderer in a way. Like, she just is completely, you know, self-interested and, you know, kind of like almost obsessively selfish in some ways. And but she kind of, it is an interesting story about self-actualization and liberation through nastiness, you know, which is like and kind of like a John Waters thing to do. And she's a brash, loud, obnoxious character in a lot of ways. She's also a fun character in a lot of ways, and she does represent, as is John Waters' kind of like whole ethos, the idea that everything that is that society thinks is bad and ugly and wrong is actually beautiful, and what society thinks is beautiful is actually disgusting, you know. And she kind of represents that in a way that makes you think about, especially thinking of the 70s and you know, gay liberation. This is like right after Stonewall, but before the AIDS crisis, and there's this whole idea of like going out there and challenging what society thinks about sexual norms and you know, how you present in terms of gender and all of that stuff. So I do think it's a really, it's a funny, brash, abrasive movie. If you've never seen a John Waters movie, it might be one, a good one to like get what his whole thing was about. And it is, and it's not, I don't think, one of those like it's so bad it's good kind of movies. I think it's like a, it's a movie that get, it's starting to get at something, and it's aesthetic, it is, it's part of that. You know, the whole idea of the movie is that what's what we think is ugly is actually beautiful, and the movie embodies that as well. And so I think it's a great movie. It's, you know, I think I would put it in like a list of like, you know, those Sight and Sound lists of the 100 best movies ever made or something. So I love it.
I haven't seen that, but I've heard of it. I know it has that iconic Christmas tree scene. So in
Yeah,
the yeah, so in
it
the World of Christmas
does.
movie watcher is I've heard about it. Yeah, I also I mean I didn't dislike it as much as you, but I was just kind of on because I
On
do
Poor
agree about
Things.
yeah, on Poor Things. I think that it works for a fair amount, but I really think that the Paris section feels redundant. I feel like everything that she learns in that section, she already learned on the boat, and so it's just kind of like
Yeah.
is becoming a sex worker so important to human development that we need to spend that long and So I was just kind of meh on it, but I think that I can understand why people are excited about it, but it wasn't my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, two and a half hours for that movie is a long time. It's like
it's very self-indulgent. It's one of the most self-indulgent movies of the year, no question. No question. I think it will win best actress. I think we'll end up going to her. And I think that, I mean, it could be Lily. Yeah. But I think it's the battle. It's the hardest one to predict.
It's probably the toughest one. I do think it's going to be Lily Gladstone, but I do think it's a tight race. What I do think Poor Things is going to get is probably costumes and production design. It looks like it's going that way.
It's pretty close to a lock, I think, in those two. So there we go. I think that it's easy to suggest the favorite. I think another option,
the same director
for
and,
the
you know,
same,
yeah,
very similar style, same actress, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what do you have next?
Next, I have Killers of the Flower Moon. I just ordered these in my order of preference, but all of these I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. But Killers of the Flower Moon made my top 10. And I think it was an excellent film. Barbie actually did as well. Well, Barbie was 11. Mm-hmm. But the one that I think is the most easy comparison is There Will Be Blood.
Oh, yeah.
It kind of has that that sort of cynical look at the Old West. It's older than Killers of the Flower Moon, but it's got real theatrical performances. It's incredibly well made, well shot. For a long time I said this was the great American movie, and because I think it just has that frontier spirit about it, and it's just so visceral and one of the great performances of all time with Daniel Day-Lewis.
And I think you're right that they both are trying to get at something, you know, kind of like a almost like a like an original sin of American, you know, like it's the construction of America, but also like what did we have to pay for it, you know, like kind of like
sort of,
and they're both
the,
about
like,
oil, obviously.
Others that I thought of, Badlands has similar themes and is similar. Hell or High Water, modern one. It's easy to think of Wind River with Indigenous connections. I have my issues with that movie, but
I never seen that one actually.
Oh, really? Yeah, it's pretty good, but we can talk about the issues I had another time. And then another one that's way more hopeful than Killers of the Flower Moon, but it kind of speaks to an outsider perspective in America. It's actually called In America. It's a movie that I absolutely love, that I think is severely underrated and is just absolutely beautiful. It might be in my like top 20 movies of all time. I really love it. And so it's one I thought of.
I had a couple ideas for Killers of the Flower Moon as well. I thought there was a lot of talk when the movie came out about the indigenous representation and, you know, Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio making this movie, getting it made. Uh-huh. But like, you know, we don't get that many movies made by, you know, native directors or writers or stars. So, you know, that's the whole conversation. So I tried to find something that along those lines, you know, that was made in that way. And I remembered that a couple of years ago, there was a movie that I saw on Netflix. I wonder if it's still there, that it's called The Body Remembers When the World Broke Open, which is a Canadian movie in which it's a very good movie. It is one of those movies that it's shot as if it was all one long take of, like, you know, like the camera just following. Which I think works very interestingly for this movie, because it's about this woman. It's about two women who are, Indigenous First Nation people. I guess not Native Americans, they're Canadian, but or they live in Canada, I should say. And so it's just one of them is like a more, you know, affluent kind of like has a professional job type of woman, and then she in the street, she sees on the street another woman who is kind of like crying in the rain, and it's like, you know, she can tell that she is distressed, and she tries to help her, and we just follow her for the next, like, you know, however long the movie is, an hour and a half or something, just trying to get this woman who is in an abusive household, an abusive relationship, trying to help her to find a different way, you know, like to get out of there. But the movie is really, really good at getting at the psychology of both of the women, you know, the one who's trying to help, but, you know, there's only so much she can do, and she doesn't, you know, she might overstep her boundaries at some point. And the woman who is really in the thick of it, and really, I think to me, it conveyed in a way that I see in very few movies, like how hard it is to get out of those situations in terms of the psychology of what it takes and how trapped the people who are in those situations feel, you know, in an abusive household. So I thought it was a very powerful movie, and I thought it has great performances. And I do think that I really recommend it to anyone who would like to watch that.
I've never heard of that one. Cool.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. My next one, it's my turn, right?
Yeah.
My next one, how many do you have left, Rachel? Because I have three.
You do?
Yeah, I think you might have done two in a row. I think we might have not noticed that at some point.
Oh, oops. Oh, sorry.
That's okay. So I'll just do two
I only
in
have
a row
one more.
Because I have. Oh, sorry. Wow, really? Okay, so let me do two in a row because they're actually kind of connected. The ones that I have are Anatomy of a Fall and Maestro, which I think have something in common, although it might not seem so at first, in that they are movies, I think, essentially about marriage. You know, Maestro is obviously about Leonard Bernstein and his
That's
marriage
true.
to Felicia Montealegre, and kind of like how that was a fundamental part of him as a person, but also something that was complicated because he was a gay man, basically, and they had this arrangement, but, you know, it obviously brought up a lot of feelings and conflict between them. And in Anatomy of a Fall, you have the story of this woman whose husband dies and everybody thinks she killed him, and it's this whole, like, she goes to this court case
trial,
you know, where they, you know, basically are putting into question the nature of their marriage, you know.
Yeah, it is interesting. You think about it that mm-hmm. that four of the movies this year are really about marriage. You know,
what are the other ones you're thinking?
Well,
of?
Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh,
the
yeah,
toxic
of course.
Marriage.
Yeah,
and Past Lives.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah, yeah, marriage is definitely in the air. So I have two recommendations about that involve marriage for Maestro, and I have to thank you, Rachel, for this, for making this connection, which, you know, is the movie Phantom Thread, which is
yes
one of my favorite movies of all time, and obviously it's a story about a complicated relationship which eventually becomes a marriage between a person played by Daniel Day-Lewis, who's this fashion designer who's incredibly fussy and demanding and, like, you know, a very, you know, kind of like annoying person to be around because he's very full of himself, but he's also a very good designer, and he's, like, you know, kind of like a bit of a pill. And then you have this
diva
woman played by Vicky Creeps, who comes into his life for, you know, first as just one more of his lovers that he picks up and then discards, but she's also kind of like a tough person to be around because she's so stubborn and she wants something out of life, and she's not going to leave this marriage or be tossed around just like that, you know. So I think it's like one kind of like a movie about, what did they say, like unstoppable force meets immovable object.
Oh,
in these
yeah.
two people, you know, and just how does that marriage work and how do they end up making it work or not work is I think one of my favorite things about that movie, which I find to be very funny and very romantic, even though a lot of people might disagree because it does go into some unexpected dark places. But yeah, it's a, you know, just like in Maestro, it's a movie about creative people in a marriage. So I think that was great of you to point out, Rachel, and because I love talking about Phantom Thread anytime I get. So and for Anatomy of a Fall, I thought of a movie that is called Certified Copy, which is directed by the Iranian filmmaker Abbas Kiarostami and stars Juliette Binoche and William Schimmel as, you know, takes place in Italy, and Juliette Binoche plays this woman who goes to a book presentation, kind of like a lecture conference, about this man, by this man who has written a book in which he says that a copy of a art, you know, like an art object that's been forged or copied, the copy doesn't necessarily mean that it is less valuable than the original. You know, he's kind of like trying to put that into question of like whether a copy is inherently less valuable than the original. And so at the end of the lecture, Juliette Binoche goes up to him and they start talking and they start walking around, driving around Italy, having a conversation about what they think about copies versus originals and art and what that means. And eventually they run into this person who mistakes them for a married couple, and they start to pretend that they are a married couple. And by the end of the movie, you don't know if they are pretending or that maybe they actually were once a married couple and they're not anymore, or maybe they're still married. And the whole movie starts to become this question of like, what is actually the relationship between these two people? And does it matter? You know, like, mm-hmm. is the copy, is it less powerful than if it was original, or is it not? Or what are the feelings that are being felt? Which I think is something that Anatomy of a Fall is trying to get at as well, in terms of like looking at this relationship and saying only the people inside of the relationship know the truth. And from the outside, it might look all kinds of different ways. I think Certified Copy does it in a much more, to me, interesting and playful and exciting way than Anatomy of a Fall, which is a movie that I liked just okay. But so I really recommend it. It's a great, great movie. I mean, I love both of these movies, Phantom Thread and Certified Copy. So I would recommend them to anyone who.
Yeah. Well, and I think we agree that I don't think Maestro is going to win anything. It was lucky to be nominated.
I actually think it probably will win makeup.
You're right.
That's probably the only thing, right? None of the kind of quote unquote major awards that it's nominated for, like actor, actress, director. Well, I didn't even get into director, but like, you know, it's not going to win any of those, but I mm-hmm. think makeup, just because it's such an impressive makeup job, is probably the one thing that it's going to get.
Yeah. I think
Anatomy of a Fall, on the other hand, though, I do think that's going to get original screenplay.
I think so.
People really love that movie.
It was a lot better. Maybe low expectations helped, because I thought this looks really pretentious.
Mm-hmm.
I thought surprisingly not that pretentious. Like, I wouldn't give it that high on the pretentiousness scale.
Yeah.
And I was really drawn into the courtroom proceedings the question mm-hmm. of did she do it or did she not? And going right. back and forth. And I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. So, but yeah, I think mm-hmm. that also, even though I don't love this movie, I think Gone Girl.
Oh, definitely. That was the first thing that I thought for Anatomy of a Fall. But then I thought, like, well, Gone Girl, everyone's seen that, right? Like, what am I going to recommend Gone Girl? Yeah. But I think you're right. I think that's the movie that I thought of immediately.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. So my last one is, we didn't really say whether Killers of Flower Moon would win anything, but I think Lily's the best shot, right?
It really is the only shot that it has at winning, which I do think it's a bit of a shame, because I really love that movie. I do. To me, it was the best movie that I saw last year. And you know, if Lily Gladstone wins, and I hope she does, I would be really happy. But, you know, it would have been nice to see a little bit more spread of the love, especially since Oppenheimer's going to win so many things. But yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people really don't like the fact that it was told from the abuser's perspective, but mm-hmm. I think that the movie was trying to say something in that about power and control.
And about, my thing is this. I think what the movie is trying to say with that is about how easy it is to go along with these horrible things, and how easy we can, like, you know, justify it to ourselves and like say, like, well, I don't really have control over this. You know, if you're Larry, well, my uncle, you know, he knows what's best. I'm just going to trust him. I'm not going to look at this. You know, I might be giving this to my wife, but I don't really know what's in it. It's probably not killing her, you know? So I think it's very easy to do that as people, you know? And I think there's a lot of things going on in the world right now. You know, I don't know, like all kinds of things, like from, I don't even want to start listing them, but like, you know, I could think of a million things that I look at and I'm like, wow, it's really easy for me to just forget that this thing is happening and just go along with my life. And yeah.
Yeah. Well, the last one I have is the holdovers. And there was a lot of things that I thought of with this. The one, if I had to pick just one, is The Perks of Being a Wallflower is what I pick. It's one of my favorite movies. I absolutely love this film. The way that it tackles sort of it's about teenagers. Mm-hmm. And it's the way that it tackles our lives and what kind of matters and how we contribute the importance of friendship, mm-hmm. unlikely friendships, all of that is in there for The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Mm-hmm. It obviously doesn't really have the adult component, but I think it also talks about mental health and I just absolutely love it. But that's my big pick. And then a couple others I thought of: Sideways, another Alexander Payne, mm-hmm, with Paul Giamatti. Dazed and Confused for the 70s teen. And then I know you hate it, but The Dead Poets Society. I feel like how can you not kind of well, think about it?
Well, about a teacher, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like the urtext of that, kind of. Mm-hmm. I do have a recommendation for the holdovers, Rachel, and I wonder if you've seen this movie. It's called Princess Sid. Have you ever heard of this?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
I think that you might really like this movie. And I think what makes me think of it in connection to the holdovers is that intergenerational relationship between Paul Giamatti and the student played by mm-hmm. Dominic Sessa. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
In this movie, it's about this high school girl who goes to spend the summer in Chicago with her aunt, and they haven't seen each other that much, but then they spend the summer together and they have this very interesting relationship that I think it's one of the most, I don't know, I find this movie very, very moving in terms of like a girl who's like trying to find herself and coming of age. And a woman who, you know, is a single woman who has never had a child and who's lived her life devoted to, she's a writer and a teacher, and she's devoted to writing and her work, kind of like Paul Giamatti. And she's also a Christian woman, a believer in God. And she presents all of these things in a way that I've seen very few movies, do, in a way that I think takes her faith very seriously and as real, without judging her, and also not in like kind of like the, you know, the more like mainstream Christian movies do, in which it's all about like miracles and like faith above all else. Mm-hmm. You know, it takes a very mundane look at what faith is like in her day-to-day life in a way that I found like really moving and really interesting. And I really, really love that movie. And I really recommend it to everyone listening, and especially to you, Rachel. I would love to know what you think about it.
Cool. Yeah, I'll definitely check it out. All right. I think the holdovers is only going to win supporting actress.
I think I agree with that.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit surprised because people seem to love it that much, but I do think that because she is so beloved, Devendra Randolph in supporting actor and actress, and she is winning everything, you know, it feels like all of the attention has gone to there. And it seems like, you know, sometimes it's like, well, the holdovers, I'm going to vote for that and support an actress. So you might want to vote for something else in screenplay or an actor and that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it would be a massive upset if she didn't win. If there's anything that's a lock, it is this. And there's a chance for Paul Giamatti. He has won a few things, but I think it's Cillian Murphy's night.
Yeah,
so, they're both good, so
they're both
I understand.
Really, I understand as well. Paul Giamatti is definitely the one actor who could maybe win other than Cillian Murphy. It seems like the other ones are pretty much out of the running. So
yeah, definitely.
All right, and our last movie is The Zone of Interest, which is a movie that I also, I feel like all the movies I talk about, I didn't really like. I thought Anatomy of a Fall and American Fiction were pretty good. And I love Oppenheimer. I love Killers of the Flower Moon. The Holdovers is really good. Barbie, I enjoyed. So just so people don't think I'm being too negative. But anyway, The Zone of Interest, I really didn't like. And the conceit with The Zone of Interest is that they did this thing where they built this house, which is basically where the commandant who was in charge of Auschwitz lived back in during World War II. And they kind of had these people go into the house playing these Nazis and going about their life and, you know, their with the script and whatever. And they did kind of like a Big Brother sort of thing where they had all these cameras and they, you know, recorded them going about it. And to me, the whole conceit of it felt a little bit phony and empty. You know, it was just like all these people pretending to be these horrible Nazis, but you know, obviously it's a movie that is trying to depict this as something horrible that happened in real life. You know, it's a tragedy and it's, you know, it's the Holocaust. It's like it's one of the most horrible things that happened. And then but the people making it know this, you know, and there is a distance there that I think the movie can never quite get out of because I almost feel like for the movie to really work at what it's trying to do, it would have to be a movie that I think would should probably not be made, which is one that actually tries to sympathize with these people, one that actually tries to put, you know, you in the perspective of the people who were living there without that distance. And that I don't know if it's something that anybody wants to be watching. And, you know, but there is a movie, a documentary from 2013 called The Act of Killing, which I think is the one movie that I could think of that tries to do something similar and gets as close as I think you could get. And in that movie, it's a movie by director Joshua Oppenheimer. That's kind of funny. I didn't think of that. But talking about Oppenheimer, but it's a documentary where he follows people in Indonesia who were part of the kind of like death squad leaders that of part of the kind of like military government that took play that took over I can't remember when. I think something along the 60s or something like that. The you know military right-wing government takes over and they were in charge of finding communists and killing them. You know, basically, and torturing them and all of that stuff. And these people are still around because the government is still the same since then. You know, the people, the government has continued to be in power, and the people who were around doing all these, you know, atrocities are still around, and they're political figures in their villages and in their towns. And in this movie, they go around telling the story of what they did and even reenacting some of the things that they did, which, but in this case, it's being reenacted by the people who actually did them. And it's a, you know, morally maybe questionable. People might have objections to the movie's proceeding, but I do think there is something about seeing the people who actually did that reenact these things and see the effect that reenacting them has on them. That I think it's something that I, you know, you couldn't get in a movie otherwise, you know. So I do think that that's an approach that worked for that documentary that doesn't quite work for me in The Zone of Interest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more in the middle on the Zone of Interest. I did mildly recommend it because I do think it's like an interesting thought experiment. I guess it worked better for me than for you. The idea of sort of the banality of evil that these people go about their everyday lives, they're worried about moving, things like that. And I mean, I do think that scene when he finds the skull in the river when he's fishing is really chilling. And I don't know, just that constant background noise of, you know, and we know what it is, and they knew, but we really know. And so I thought it was an interesting movie when you kind of want to talk about and with people after you see it. I always kind of appreciate that. But I do think I just kind of think it would have worked better as a short. I don't think there's a feature film there.
It also feels repetitive, I
It
think,
does feel
to me as
repetitive,
well.
and I just think it would have, if it was a tight featurette or a tight short, I think it would have made its point better And I don't know. That's kind of where I, but I did give it a mild recommendation. I didn't love it, but
I can see that.
I'm
definitely in the minority there. I think most people seem to respond, have responded very, you know, there. I know a lot of people who've been moved by it, who've been like really shaken by it. So,
yeah,
definitely. I think in terms of the banality of evil, in my opinion, Killers of the Flower Moon is a better movie about that same idea. You know,
mm-hmm.
just like in what we were saying about the Leonardo DiCaprio character. Kind of like making him be played by a movie star and asking us to identify with him and go along on this journey with him, I think gets closer to that than this movie. But anyway,
I can
I'm
see
just
that.
Going
I can
on
see that. I mean, I like Killers of the Flower Moon much better.
Mm-hmm.
Much better. So, so let's see. So you, so are, is that it? Did we do
that's
it.
I guess we should just say that Zone of Interest probably gonna win Best International Film.
Yes.
And it's, I think Best Sound, like you're saying, it's also very possible that it, so probably gonna win a couple of things. What
mm-hmm.
else is there in terms of prediction? We've gone through most of the big categories. I guess animated feature.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think animation is really interesting because both The Boy and the Heron and Spider-Verse have won awards.
What do you think? I think Boy and the Heron.
Mm. It's tough. I mean, that is one of the hardest because Boy and the Heron just won the BAFTA.
Yeah. I'll tell you why I think
Spider-Verse has won Golden Globe and a bunch of other stuff.
No, The Boy and the Heron won the Golden Globe. The Spider-Verse won, I think, the Producers Guild and also the Annie Awards, right?
Oh, yeah. You're right.
But my thinking is this. I do think that there is a snobbery to the Academy. And it is very rare for sequels to win animated feature. And especially, and it's also very hard for movies based on pre-existing properties to even get nominated. The fact that Spider-Man
mm-hmm.
Into the Spider-Verse won what was to me a huge deal. You know, it was very unusual for a winner. The only sequels that win are Toy Story sequels for some reason. They just always win. But other than that, it is always something a little bit more original, a little bit. So that's why I think I will give the edge to Boy and the Heron.
It really could be. I don't know. I think if I was a betting person, I would still go with Spider-Verse just because I think
mm-hmm.
more people have seen it.
That's true.
I think more
that's
people love it. And there's still an anime bias. Even with Miyazaki, he's only won once.
Yeah,
and
but I think that kind of makes it a little bit of like, he's only won once, you know? I think it can go both ways. I do think there's a chance for
both.
It's
one of the tougher categories, no question.
Yeah.
To pick.
And the other one, I do think that visual effects, I think we said this when we did our live stream when the nominations came out, but I am more convinced now than even then that I do think Godzilla Minus One is going to win Best Visual Effects. I have this feeling that it's going to happen.
I'd be so happy. I really love that movie, so I would be thrilled. And it would just be such a nice little lesson for Hollywood, hopefully.
And I do think we are in this moment where, like, you know, international movies just become hits and win these awards, you know, like RRR last year winning Best Song. I do think I feel something kind of similar.
Yeah.
Maybe the groundswell hasn't been as big as for RRR, but I do think it's very similar in that way.
And sometimes the smaller movies, if a Godzilla movie can be considered small, do win Best Visual Effects, like Ex Machina.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So that would be very, that would make me very happy. That would be cool.
All right. So that's kind of it.
Yeah. Well, let us know what you think. I'd be very curious to hear people's picks if they want to suggest movies of a similar vein of these Oscar nominees. I'd love to hear what you have to say. And you could tweet us your answers at Criterion Pod, and we'd love to hear what you think.
That's right. You can find me on Letterboxd if you're interested in more of my movie thoughts. If you search for my name, Conrado Falco III. And how about you, Rachel?
Yeah, you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all over social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. And also, you can find me at Homeworkies Podcast.
And we'll be back in a couple of weeks we will be talking about Martin Scorsese's Raging Bull, starring Robert De Niro, which is coming to the Criterion Channel March 1st. And yeah, we haven't really covered Scorsese on the podcast before, so this will be I guess overdue.
Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't realize.
Oh no! Wait, we definitely did. We did Age of Innocence, one of my favorites.
So oh yeah, yeah, yeah. He has such variety. It's hard to remember.
Yeah, well, but you know, he'll be back, and that's also appropriate and overdue.
Yeah. Very good. Well, yeah, happy Oscars, everybody.
Yeah. See you next time.
Bye.